This is the Communication Research Podcast, a production of the Communication Research Center at Boston University. For more information about the Communication Research Center, please go to www.bu.edu/com/CRC. In this podcast, we have a colloquium presentation by Professor Nikos Leandros of Pantheon University in Greece, the topic, Media Concentration in Europe.
Happy New Year. Thank you very much for the invitation, first of all, and your presence here. This gives me an opportunity to discuss a little bit about the problems of media concentration, the wider European debate, and the Greek case or the Greek example. I suppose that I'll try to finish in half an hour in order to have some time to talk a little bit, but please feel free to interrupt me if there are any questions, especially with respect to the Greek case. I understand that there are many issues that probably are not familiar. So, first of all, two questions. The first question is, do we need special legislation about media concentration? Because we have the general legislation that favors competition, the general legislation against monopolies. Do we need something more than that for media? What is the rationale for that, if there is any? This is the first question. And the second question is, what exactly, as I will point out later on, immediately afterwards, the European debate is centered around the notion of pluralism. What exactly do we mean by pluralism, and what's the relationship between media concentration and pluralism? So these are the two questions that define the general framework within which the Greek case is going to develop. In general, not only in Europe, but I would say throughout the world, certainly the Western world, there is an agreement that there is a need for special legislation concerning media. This is because media is not an industry like all the others, but is an industry that plays a crucial role for the operation of democracy. So, the European Parliament, the Commission, the Council of Europe, there are many documents, many reports that emphasize this special role of media in our society, and therefore the need to ensure that there is pluralism in the media and that they operate in a spirit of tolerance and openness. In particular, Article 10 of the European Convention of Human Rights states that democratic countries are obliged to protect and, when necessary, to take positive measures to ensure diversity of opinion in the media. So, not only protect diversity and pluralism, but if necessary, take positive action, positive measures. There is a big philosophical debate here if we would adopt the public sphere approach, the Habermasian public sphere approach, which emphasizes the need for intervention in order to have a functioning public sphere, or a more liberal free market approach that emphasizes simply the existence of choices, that there are no obstacles to individuals. But anyway, as far as the European Union is concerned, there is a clear consensus in favor of positive legislation if necessary, and positive action if necessary, in order to ensure not only pluralism as an essential prerequisite for the operation of democracy. The European Union has tried in the 90s to harmonize the various policies that are adopted by the national, by the different countries. But these efforts have followed, have failed. So, although there is understanding that there is a need to have legislation that protects pluralism, on the other hand, there is such a legislation at a European level does not exist, because efforts, a common European law concerning media concentration, pluralism, etc., etc., does not exist. What exists are the laws in different countries, which of course have important differences, and the situation in every country is different. So there is not a common European law, but there is a debate. And what the European Union is trying to do now, after failing to propose a common legal framework, is trying actually to generate a discussion and create a tool that will allow, with certain instruments and measures that and indicators that will allow the various countries to have an idea of the situation concerning pluralism in the different countries. So there is a study that proposed certain indicators, a series of indicators, and based on a set covering legal, economic, and socio-cultural considerations. And the stated aim of this discussion and this study is to stimulate public debate and underpin policy making at national level. Not to offer solutions, it's policy neutral. So there is a series of indicators, legal, economic, covering legal, economic, and socio-cultural considerations in five basic domains. I'll talk about it later on. And hopefully it's a holistic approach. It covers various aspects of media pluralism, and therefore it will give a common understanding in the 27 European countries, if there is a need for action, if there is a need for legal intervention, and if there is such a need, the countries, it's up to them to decide to take the appropriate measures and decide which are the appropriate measures. So we are at this stage now. Now, the second question is, of course, what exactly we mean by media pluralism. The definition given in this study that finished a few months ago and was published a few months ago, the definition given is that media pluralism refers to the existence of a wide range of social, political, and cultural values, opinions, information, and interests which find expression through the media. And in particular, there are five dimensions of external and internal pluralism, or risk domains, as they are mentioned in the study. These five dimensions that should exist in order to have pluralism in every respect is cultural pluralism, political pluralism, geographical and local pluralism, pluralism of media ownership and control, and pluralism of media types and genres. So you see that we have two cultural and political pluralism which have to do with the actual functioning of the media. These are indicators of internal pluralism, as they are called, and three indicators of external pluralism. We might have external pluralism, many types of media, pluralism of media ownership and yet fail to have internal pluralism, pluralism in content, if you wish. And indeed, this is something that we observe. Our own experience, for instance, even without a measurement, shows that although the number of media outlets have multiplied, and certainly you can say that there is pluralism of media types and genres, and perhaps pluralism of media ownership, in some countries at least. On the other hand, many of us feel that certain types of content that have to do with the environment, that have to do with culture, and perhaps certain political views, etc., are not represented appropriately in the media. So it's a pluralism is a big issue, has many dimensions, many different dimensions, and the indicators try to measure all of these elements. And of course, this debate takes place within a framework of technological, regulatory, and economic changes and developments that transform very quickly the media sector, and they have an impact, a very significant impact on media pluralism. I'll come to that a bit later on. So the Greek case. Before going into the Greek case, I'd like to say something more here. These changes generated the question: is it really necessary at this stage to talk about pluralism? Because the number of media have multiplied. So, is there any need to change? Many people, I would say that the immediate response of most people is that there is pluralism in the media sector. Now we have thousands, and with the internet now we have an infinite number, you can say. Everyone can promote, can produce content. Therefore, is there any need to talk about pluralism? I have to say that on the one hand, we have this multiplication of media outlets, but on the other hand, at the same time, we have increasing concentration of capital in mass media sector. We have to differentiate between micromedia and macromedia. Macromedia, the traditional mass media, television, radio, newspapers, that still play a crucial role in the operation of the political system and society, have experienced, despite their multiplication, they have experienced in many countries a concentration of capital and control. But the wider media landscape is much more complicated because at the same time, of course, we have all these possibilities to create content by individuals. So the analysis basically refers to mass media, to macro media. Now, the Greek case. Greece followed more or less the path that European Union followed and the whole world followed in the 90s in terms of ending monopoly, state monopoly in television, not only television, in broadcasting, radio and television. So until 1989, there was state monopoly in broadcasting, radio and television. This ended in 1989. And of course, there were many private channels. Analog TV, digital TV starts right now. So, the number of private channels has increased very significantly in recent years, and today there are about 135 private analog TV stations, and nearly 1,000 radio stations. But despite this very large number of channels and stations, five private companies dominate the scene. And their share of the market in terms of audience is so audience share is shown here. These three channels are the state-owned. They belong to the state-owned, to the public corporation that still operates. So the public corporation has got about 17% of the market as a whole. These five private channels have got about 70%, I think, that's the actual number. It's 68.5. And all the rest, more than 100 channels, have got just 14%. So despite the great number of channels, five leading media players dominate the scene. In as far as newspapers are concerned, also there is a very large number of newspapers. At the end of 2008, there were 162 daily local newspapers, local or regional newspapers, and 37 Athens-based general interest plus sports plus financial dailies. So in all, about 200 daily newspapers in Greece, 37 of them based in Athens, general interest, sports, and financial. But so again, as in the case of channels, there is a very big, there is a large number of outlets. But if you think about the most important section of the market, which is the general interest newspapers of Athens, the political dailies of Athens, the so-called national newspapers, here, what we see here is that the four firm concentration ratio is very high. Let me say a few things about this table, because it has some interesting features. First of all, you see the number of titles. Again, I repeat that this is the number of titles of national newspapers, the political national newspapers, okay, not economic or sport newspapers. But this is economically, politically, historically, the most important section of the market by far. So you see here that, for instance, average daily circulation has declined very dramatically over the years. It was 834,000 copies per day. So all these newspapers sold 834,000 copies per day in 1990, and in 2008 sold only 351, about 40% of what was the situation in 1990. From 834, they went down to 351, and the decline continues. So first of all, there is a very dramatic decline of circulation. Despite this very dramatic decline, you see that the number of titles has actually increased, which is a paradox, you can say. You could imagine that many of these newspapers would not be able to survive economically. But this is an important hint about the role of newspapers in Greece and the operation of the political system. The political system is, I would say, clientelistic in Greece. So many of these newspapers, I cannot say all, but most of these newspapers are actually used as tools in wider economic gains, or are parts of wider economic empires. So many of these newspapers, daily national newspapers, sell 2,000 copies, 3,000 copies, 1,000 copies, which makes them, they should go bankrupt by any means and whatever, but they continue to operate. And actually they have increased, their number has increased. So this is something that you have to remember. And the other thing that is also important is that the four firm concentration ratio is very high, and has actually increased. To obtain a more robust understanding of the situation in the newspaper sector, I estimated the Hirschman-Hirfendahl index, which is the sum of squares of the individual market shares of all the firms in the industry. This index has increased from 0.1126 in 1990. From that number, from 0.1126 to 0.1566, which indicates again, this index indicates a significant increase in concentration. The US Department and the Federal Trade Commission regards markets with HHI at this range as moderately concentrated, and there is a possibility that takes action if there is a merger in a moderately concentrated market. So this index also shows an increase, not only a concentrated market, but also an increase in concentration during the years. In addition, there is another major problem. It's cross-ownership. We've seen that five companies dominate the television scene, and four companies dominate the national newspapers scene. And practically they are the same. They belong to the same people. They are part of, so there is also very significant cross-ownership. And to conclude, we can say that during the last 15 years, an oligopoly of five, six families that own many media, in print media, newspapers, radio stations, portals, periodicals, and in many cases they expand their activities in other sectors of the economy, has been created. The problem of media concentration perhaps existed in newspapers before liberalization of broadcasting, but now these media conglomerates are much more powerful than they were in the previous period. The fact that many of these conglomerates, the majority of these conglomerates, are huge economic empires with very important interests in shipping, construction, manufacturing, and other activities in Greece and abroad, has had many consequences. In the first place, changed the old balances between political elites and media elites, because media elites became much more powerful than they were in the previous phase. And secondly, they created many fears of instrumentalization of the media, that media do not play their public role anymore. They don't promote, let's say, this pluralism or whatever, what is needed for a debate, genuine debate in a democracy. but actually promote the interests of the entrepreneurs that own the media. And these entrepreneurs at the same time have huge interests in many other sectors of the economy. In a clientelistic society like Greece, it's very useful to have a powerful tool in your hands, like a newspaper, like a leading newspaper or a leading channel, if you want to promote your business interests. Now, there is also a paradox in Greece. The paradox is that over these years, there were very strict anti-concentration laws. So if you see the legal system that has to do with media, you will see some draconian laws. For instance, the first law in 1989 said that no person is allowed to own more than 25% of a television company, and many other restrictions. None of these restrictions was ever applied. So you have a very draconian law, but which was never actually applied right from the beginning. And actually this media operated with freedom to do anything they wanted. They grabbed frequencies, they didn't pay anything for the use of the frequencies of the airwaves, and they were free to operate in every respect and in every way that was useful for them. Yes.
What accounts for the lack of enforcement of regulations?
This it's the clientelistic characteristic of the Greek political system. The politicians, I think the political system, wants to have the possibility to, in a sense, to take measures and actions against powerful media, but eventually exchanges this possibility with favors from the media, and vice versa. So, you have the law, but then there is a below-the-table negotiation between the political elites and the media elites. Are we going to apply this law or not? If you want us to avoid applying this law, this draconian law, you have to promote this, that, and do that, and vice versa. So you have these tools, both players, media and political elites, have certain tools in their hands, and they use them according to their interests, according to the general situation of the country, etc., etc. This is what happens. So you have the law, but below the table there are negotiations between the powerful players to what extent you will apply the law, if you will apply the law at all. So you have this paradox that it's difficult to explain. There's another important point. The fear of the political elites or the need of the political elites to safeguard their position was such that in 2012 they changed the constitution and said in the constitution, in the new clauses of the constitution, that media entrepreneurs should not be allowed to participate in tenders for major public works. Many of these entrepreneurs, as I said, they had construction companies. So, and therefore, there was a prohibition included in the constitution against these companies or companies that belong to people that also owned media to participate in tenders for major public works. And there was a law following the change of the constitution. But at this stage, in the mid 2005-2006, the European Commission intervened against the law and said that this law is against the is against freedom of competition. You cannot differentiate between entrepreneurs that want to participate in to take public works, depending on whether or not have media or not. So there was a clash with the general laws of the European Union concerning freedom of competition, and the Greek government was forced to scrap this law. Now I want to end up with three conclusions. The first conclusion is that in Greece there is a major problem of media concentration, talking basically about mass media. So there is a major problem of media concentration, and this problem has increased during the last 15 years. This is a problem that exists in many other European countries. So the general debate about media pluralism and the need for action, etc., etc., is relevant and necessary. Actually, in many other, especially Eastern European countries, the problem is even worse, because in many of these countries you have three or four foreign-owned companies that own 60%, 70%, 80% of the media sector, especially in television. So there is a problem. This is the first conclusion. The second conclusion is that it's not enough to have anti-concentration laws. You also need the political will to implement the laws. It's not enough to have indicators, but even laws, because the media are very much part of the political process. So what happens at the end depends very much, and not only in Greece, I would say, depends very much on wider political developments. But certainly in the case of Greece, and I think in many other countries, laws are not enough. This is the second conclusion. There's also a need for political will to implement the laws. And the third conclusion is that in the case of Greece, very clearly, there is a contradiction within the European Union between, on the one hand, the need to promote pluralism, the stated aim of promoting pluralism, and the other aim, freedom of competition. You have the phenomenon of instrumentalization of the media in Greece, but this problem, efforts to solve the problem failed perhaps, or up to a point, due to the intervention of the European Commission that promoted freedom of competition, found that freedom of competition is more important than efforts to end this problem of instrumentalization of the media. So these are the three conclusions, basic conclusions. Thanks very much for your attention.
Okay, thank you, Nikos. That was very interesting. We have time for questions, so if I can't see you, shout out your question. Lou has a question, Nikos.
Nikos, what happens when this client system meets the free market? In other words, what's the public's response, the buying public's response as news consumers to this client system that seems to reduce choice?
Yeah.
Well, for example, do people flock to the one newspaper that seems to operate with some independence?
You can see the response of the public here. For instance, of course, I don't want to say that all newspapers are the same. Of course not. Okay, there are some few serious newspapers that are trying to do their job. But if you ask me about the response of the public,
right.
The response of the public, because you know that human beings generally create stereotypes, okay, and find it difficult, or not difficult, perhaps they are not very keen to separate and differentiate. So the general response of the public is that confidence in the media is extremely low, and public opinion polls show that the political parties, the government, and the media, basically television, but also newspapers, not the internet and not so much radio, but the mass media, so the mass media, government, and the parties, the political parties, are the less respected institutions in Greece. So the people, the public, rejects mass media now, and moves, and will move much more in the future to the internet and other forms. The decline of circulation is not so much for economic purposes, for economic reasons. Of course, you can say that whatever, but you see that it's a long-term phenomenon, and it's not associated with the internet either. The internet, okay, has an impact after 2000 or after 2002 or 2003, in recent years. But you see that there is a gradual decline, despite many efforts by owners to promote newspapers with gifts and CDs and things like that. And actually, many of these papers that are bought now are not bought for their content, but for the CDs that have with them, CDs and other presents and so on and so forth. So the response of the public in general is to lose confidence in journalists, in mass media. There are a few exceptions, as I say. One or two newspapers that have managed to increase their circulation. There are, of course, some TV programs or some journalists who are respected, but in general, the overwhelming response is one of rejection and criticism, severe criticism. Yes?
Just to put some of these figures in context, what is the population of Greece?
11 million.
That's still a lot of newspapers for 11 million people.
No, 350,000 per day combined circulation.
Right, but I'm looking at the second, the total circulation.
This is total circulation throughout the year. This is not so important. What you should. You should look at.
That's not for each title. That's
no.
In total.
This is in total. This is the important figure, which is average daily circulation for all newspapers combined. So in 2008, you have 22 national newspapers that every day, on average, sell 350,000 copies. All of them, which is a very small. Of course, there are local newspapers, provincial newspapers, which are doing better, I would say, because they are closer to the needs of the local society. These national newspapers now, if you read them, 90% of the news are about the political process, fighting between the parties, etc. It's really irrelevant to the reality of the population. To a large extent, it's irrelevant. The people are facing very big problems today, economic problems,
problems of identity, problems with the environment, economic crisis, etc., etc. And the newspapers are still interested to promote the political personalities that they like. So it's irrelevant, really. But they are not interested, most of them. They are not interested because if they get something, if they get if the political system favors them in their other activities, it's much more important than losing copies. I don't want to say that they are not interested. Of course they are interested because they are losing political power at the same time. They are interested, but this is the way that they operate now, and they operate for a number of years. Again, I say there are exceptions. Okay, I'm talking about the general image projected by most of these papers, and this is shown clearly in the decline, very dramatic. I don't think that there is any other Western European country with a similar decline in circulation. Unfortunately, there are no data for the local newspapers, the regional newspapers, because there is no centralized system of circulation. Here we have a centralized system, and therefore we know what the newspapers are selling. So we have no data. Every local newspaper gives its own figures, which are not reliable, of course. Usually they are inflated in order to attract advertising. So we have no data, no reliable data. But from what we know from readership statistics, so we don't have data about circulation, but we have some studies about readership. And we know the feeling we have is that they are doing much better, and in general, their standing is much higher. Okay, and they are part of the local community, and they play a role in the local community. Many of them, not all of them, but many of them. So actually, the smaller independent newspapers, in the case of local newspapers, we are talking about a different type. We are talking about smaller companies, independent companies, and owners that most of them are journalists or started as journalists, and they have ties with the local community. Here it's a different model. Okay, they are part of wider empires or instruments in political games, most of them, or I would say all of them. So it's a different model. Okay, independent newspapers belonging to small companies, I think are doing much better.
You have a question here.
Yeah.
Originally, at the beginning, you mentioned your research question was whether or not special legislation was needed. Toward the end, you mentioned two different aspects. One is that you already have legislation. There is legislation increase, and it's not being
implemented.
No. And the other is that the European Union, as yet, has not created legislation that's helpful with it to help break up this situation. So the question is there, the original question talked about the need for legislation. Is it your hope that the European Union will be able to come up with something ends up being able to? Because it sounds like the legislation we've got is not implemented.
I don't expect from someone from the outside to solve the problems. I think that the problem is political. First of all, it's political. In a sense, it's not a legal problem, it's basically a political problem. The political problem cannot be solved from the outside, it has to be solved from within the country.
Is it your hope that through the study, the taxonomy of the terminology you created will help to create
basis
for debate?
Yes, of course, this could help, no doubt, hopefully, this could help. So, one reason for doing this study is exactly to show that there is a problem. despite the multiplication of outlets of media at the moment, we have a problem. This is what I want to say to the Greek, to my students or to my colleagues, because of course it's part of academic work. So yes, okay, this could help, but to solve the problem, it's I think it's very difficult to see the solution because, as I say, it's a much wider problem. But in a sense, the problem is gradually solved by the advent of the new media. So my hope is that the new media, the internet, etc., etc., will diminish the role of the mass media, and therefore will regenerate the public sphere that in theory it exists in Greece, but in practice is dominated by a few players. So I'm not expecting so much an intervention from above. I'm hoping from, let's say, a revolution from below. And this revolution is happening through the young generation. The young generation now is creating media, is creating content, goes away. Of course there are dangers, okay, of course there are problems, but if I can see a solution, is basically through this process. I'm not saying that the creation of new media necessarily will lead to a better world, okay? It's, because there are other problems like fragmentation of the audience, personalization, etc., etc. But if we intervene, if we try to increase the potential of the new media and reduce the dangers, which is what we should do as, let's say, academics, as government, as education system, etc., etc., there is a possibility. So what it seems to be to me to be more plausible is, but of course not given that this is going to happen, but there is a possibility that through new media, a better situation might develop. Anyway, I've lost hope with the main media. Personally, I've lost hope. I don't see them as being able to regenerate themselves. Perhaps the positive elements that I see, as I say, exist in some provincial newspapers, some local newspapers, some independent entrepreneurs, yes. But still, the media landscape is in Greece is dominated by these big players. And as I say, they are extremely powerful because they don't, not only they own media, but they own huge empires, huge shipping empires. Many of them, I've heard some of them saying that the problem we have now is not how to generate money, but how to spend it. They are, especially with the expansion of China, ship owners have become extremely rich because they control, Greek ship owners control about one third of world shipping. The expansion of China with its exports helps them a lot. So can you expect from these people to... they have their own interests and they have their own priorities. That's it. And the media are part of their empires, that's all.
This has been the Communication Research Podcast, a presentation of a colloquium by Professor Nikos Leandros of Pantheon University in Greece on the topic of media concentration in Greece. For more information about this podcast and the Communication Research Center at Boston University, please go to www.bu.edu/com/crc. Thank you.